The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Michael Rosenzweig, President and CEO of the National Museum of American Jewish History. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. The silly, wonderful, ridiculous holiday of Purim is coming up this week. The fun begins Saturday night with the Purim Megillah reading and raucous celebration, followed Sunday by lots of great Purim spiel, parody plays and musicals and huge carnivals. And it must be the influence of this most preposterous Purim festival that is permeating the world, because how else could you possibly explain some of the news stories last week? For example, Charlie Sheen. And really, how can you say his name now without a laugh track? Walker, let's try that again. Charlie Sheen. Much better. Charlie Sheen, whose drug-addled war on Chuck Lorre, the producer and creator of his hugely successful TV show, Two and a Half Men, finally got him fired last week. Charlie has made a variety of borderline anti-Semitic comments about Lorre over the past few weeks. In the course of his many rants, most of which have been on the internet, Sheen called Chuck Lorre by a combination of his birth name and his Hebrew name, Chaim Levine. This attracted the negative attention of various Jewish groups, including the ADL. Its director, Abe Foxman, who will be our guest next week on Two Jewish, by the way, said that the actor's tirade left the impression that another reason for his dislike of Mr. Lorre is his Jewishness. And while nobody really went Mel Gibson on his comments, since Sheen is so obviously in wild, completely manic self-destruct mode and hates a whole lot more about Lorre than just his Judaism, nonetheless, it didn't really play very well. But Purim must be coming up, because now Charlie Sheen is claiming to be Jewish. I am not making this up. In fact, the best part about this story is that in the midst of yet another interview, Charlie suddenly remembered that he was Jewish. Oops, my bad. I have known many Jews who were not happy to admit their Judaism. I have certainly known many Jews who didn't do anything active about being Jewish, didn't go to temple or observe holidays or visit Israel. Actually, I know kind of a lot of them right now. And I have known a few self-hating Jews who actively spoke against Jewish causes and ideas, and certainly Israel. But I never, ever before heard of a Jew who forgot he was Jewish. Wow. In a world where nutcase anti-Semitism bursts out with some regularity, that really takes effort. And in a profession like Charlie Sheen's, in Hollywood, where everybody's Jewish, or even a purely and perfectly goyish movie like The King's Speech actually has a Jewish writer, how can you possibly forget that you are Jewish? Did all the drugs and alcohol and prostitutes simply eliminate that fact from his troubled little mind? Well, according to various press reports, Sheen's mother, Janet Templeton Sheen, Martin Sheen's ex-wife, is now supposedly Jewish. Only, well, she's not and never was. An exhaustive search by one enterprising guy named Nate Bloom, who writes unread columns for Jewish papers, has uncovered her family's entire genealogy going back to the early 1800s. Why exactly he felt compelled to bother with this is anybody's guess, but thanks. And found that they were Anglo-Saxon Protestants from a rural area of Kentucky and earlier Virginia. And Charlie Sheen's dad, the fine actor Martin Sheen, is famously a very devout liberal Catholic. Quite possibly Martin Sheen is the last liberal Catholic alive these days, and he certainly, in any case, is not Jewish. So Charlie Sheen, like his siblings, was baptized and raised a Catholic, too. Baptized Carlos Estevez, I think, actually. In this season of silliness, when we are so grateful at Purim time to God for saving us from major calamities, we can now also be thankful that we have escaped from the terrible fate of having to acknowledge that Charlie Sheen is Jewish. Thank God. No. And now, Crazy Charlie has also claimed that his most recent ex-wife, Brooke Miller, is Jewish, which would make his twins, taken away from him by court order, also Jewish. Well, oddly, this might be true. Miller's mom was certainly born Jewish. But who really cares as long as the kids are safe from him right now, right? You know, perhaps the weirdest part of this story is that after Sheen claimed to be Jewish, an even more repugnant figure, perhaps, the Christian Dior designer John Galliano, who was fired last week for making pro-Hitler anti-Semitic comments in a Paris bar, Galliano has now decided that he has Sephardic roots, and he is in rehab, trying to overcome his obsession with his supposed Jewish origins. Or maybe a publicist is trying to rehabilitate Galliano's destroyed reputation by pretending he has some Jewish connections that might forgive his vicious racism somehow. I must quote another young Jewish author, this time a blogger, Adam Dichter, who said, "You can't toss a coat hanger in the upscale schmata business where John Galliano plies his trade without coming across a few erratically dressed and likely Sephardic MOTs." Unfortunately for Galliano, who let loose his Hitler tirade in a Paris cafe next to one of the Earth's 6+ billion people who carry a phone camera, one of those MOTs is the black swan herself, Natalie Hirschlag, a.k.a. Natalie Portman, who is Dior's resident Shayna Madel. Natalie declared that she was shocked and disgusted by the video, will not be associated with Mr. Galliano in any way, as we reported on Too Jewish last week. Faced with the choice between the Oscar-packing baby mama with the golden touch and a guy who looks like he escaped from rehab to raid the rejects from Johnny Depp's Pirates of the Caribbean wardrobe, Christian Dior wisely booted the bigot. Indeed. Or maybe Galliano was just wearing his Purim costume a couple of weeks early. Well, all of this weirdness makes me long for the wholesome drinking, gambling, and gamboling of Purim. And so to play us in on this lovely spring morning, just a week before Purim, here's a real Sephardic song for the coming festival of Purim, Empezar a Contar, from the CD Sword of the Dove, and the great Sephardic group The Voice of the Turtle, a telling of the tale of the Book of Esther itself.
Sorry, you're cool.
That was the Sephardic group, The Voice of the Turtle, and the Purim song, Empezar a Contar. Now that sanity has been restored, when we return in a few moments on To Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Michael Rosenzweig, head of the most important new Jewish museum in the world, open in perhaps the past 10 years. Find out what it is, what it highlights, where it is, all when we come back on To Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You hear a lot of people say consistency is a good thing. After all, some places have built their reputations on consistency. Well, I got to tell you, consistency can also mean mediocrity. If you want something to be great, it has to go through an evolution. That's why at Mama's, if we find a better tomato, we'll use it. Cheese is the same way. A cow eats grain during the winter. In the spring, he's outside eating grass. What we do at Mama's is look for the best there is and go with it. All this goes to show that at Mama's, we don't strive for consistency, except that we want to consistently be the best. Come on into Mama's and find out more about our theory of pizza evolution. It's not controversial, but it's real tasty. Mama's Pizza, 4500 East Speedway in the Midway Business Park. On the east side of 22nd and Colburn, back at a Fry Shopping Center. On the north side at the southwest corner of Oracle and McGee. And on newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through eighth grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence, an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum, a variety of music and fine arts classes, combined with an award-winning sports program. THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, respect for diverse points of view. Tucson Hebrew Academy's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. THA is enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll your kid or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888. That's 529-3888 or visit thaaz.org. We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Michael Rosenzweig. He is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the National Museum of American Jewish History, the, boy, brand spanking new, exciting museum, which is the only one dedicated solely to the American Jewish experience. 100,000 square foot, state-of-the-art facility on Independence Mall in Philadelphia, just a few steps from Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell. Prior to joining the museum, he did a whole bunch of different important things, but let's talk about the museum to start with. This has been a labor of love for a lot of people for a while. You've been on board for about a little less than 2 years now. Tell us about why you decided to take it on.
Well, first, let me say it's a pleasure to be with you, Rabbi, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the museum. I have been here about 2 years, and you're right. It's been a labor of love for a large team of people for well over a decade. And I think for most of us, the project is an important one because, as you noted, this is the only museum anywhere that tells the story we tell. And all of us working on this project believe very deeply that this is a critically important story to tell. It's a story that needs to be told. You know, we Jews generally do a great job telling our story. We do it every week, reading the Torah in the synagogue. And in general, we know how to tell our story, and we know how to preserve our story. Most historians would tell you that the chapter of Jewish history in which we live now and have been living for the last 350 years on this continent is one of the very most important chapters in all of Jewish history, multi-thousand-year history that we've had as a people. And yet, before this museum, it's a story that simply was not told anywhere in any museum. So I think we all were attracted to this project more for that reason than any other.
You know, it's very exciting. I have a confession to make. I was a history major at UCLA. I'm still an amateur history lover. I've had Jonathan Sarna on, maybe the preeminent American Jewish historian. How did you guys decide who it was that advised the committee and the developers on what got included?
Well, Jonathan, as a matter of fact, is our chief historian, as you may know. And we thought it was enormously important that we be guided in our decisions about design and inclusion, and more importantly, about historical accuracy, by professional historians whose lives are really dedicated to thinking about these issues. And so we engaged Jonathan well over a decade ago, and Jonathan was also assisted by three other distinguished Jewish historians from other major universities. It was very important to us to have them on board.
What is the most exciting part about the museum for you, aside from the fact that it's open?
I think the most exciting thing about the museum is the opportunity to teach Jews and non-Jews about the American Jewish experience. It's especially important for us to have the opportunity to connect American Jews more closely with their heritage, both as Americans and as Jews. But in many ways, what's even more exciting is seeing the non-Jews who find the story interesting and who, quite frankly, see reflected in our story many aspects of their own stories. Because what happens when non-Jews recognize that much of their story is reflected in ours is they come away with an understanding, a very profound understanding, that we as Americans share a great deal in common and candidly have much more in common than there is dividing us. This is a very rough time we're living in. Civic discourse is very rough. There is, sadly, a fair amount of hostility in the air, certainly in our political discourse. And what we've observed, really, even in the short time we've been open, is that visitors leave our exhibition with a deeper understanding of what all Americans share in common, which I think contributes in a very positive way. So I'd have to say that's the most exciting thing about what we're doing here.
We will talk much more with Michael Rosenzweig. He's the president and CEO of the National Museum of American Jewish History in Philadelphia when we come back on Too Jewish.
At Handmaker's Senior Day programs, variety and interesting activities help Barbara Sanders really enjoy her time there.
They have a lot of activities that I like to do. They have ceramics, they have painting, they have sewing. We go out to the museums and to the parks, and we also go to the casino.
Handmaker helps seniors and disabled individuals maintain their independence longer than they might otherwise. Handmaker's flexible scheduling makes the Senior Day program very convenient, and Barbara feels right at home.
The staff is very nice. They take good care of you. They'll make sure that you have everything you need.
And there are other benefits, too.
All of my grandchildren have piggy banks that I've made from here, and I have a lot of ceramics in my house now because of here.
Call Handmaker at 322-7035 for more information and a complimentary one-day pass. There are new people and new friends to meet.
They're not just friendships. You know, you actually are a part of a family.
Handmaker Senior Day Program serves all faiths, centrally located on Rosemont, just south of TMC. Call 322-7035. Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Doe a Deer to My Favorite Things,
in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from twojewishradio.com or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast where you can subscribe. There was a very interesting story in the news last week. In his latest volume of the book series Jesus of Nazareth, Pope Benedict XVI, by the way, you probably didn't think you'd hear about Jesus of Nazareth on this show. Anyway, Pope Benedict XVI now says the condemnation of Jesus had complex political and religious causes and can't be blamed on the Jewish people. The Pope also said it was a mistake to interpret the words reported in the Gospel, "His blood be on us and on our children," as a kind of blood curse against the Jews. That would, of course, be news to Sarah Palin. Ah, but then what isn't? Anyway, those words, spoken by the mob that demanded Jesus' death in the Gospels, need to be read in the light of faith, says the Pope. They do not cry out for vengeance against anyone, but for reconciliation. It means that we all stand in need of the purifying power of love, which is his blood. These words are not a curse, but rather redemption, salvation, Pope Benedict said. The Pope's treatment of the events of the Passion form the core of his new book, Jesus of Nazareth, Holy Week, From the Entrance into Jerusalem to the Resurrection. This was officially presented at the Vatican on March 10th, and Jewish groups have noted its content with approval. You know, the charge of Christ killer has long been used by anti-Semites to attack and harangue Jews and to justify atrocities. Since by any standard, if Jesus actually lived, he was certainly a Jew himself, as was his mother Mary, as were his apostles and other followers, and nearly everyone who actually knew him during his lifetime, the charge has long been preposterous and nonsensical. But it wasn't officially abandoned by the Roman Catholic Church until Vatican II in 1965, with its remarkable Nostra Aetate document, the one that denied that all Jews were somehow responsible for Jesus' death. The statement of Pope Benedict, who participated in Vatican II 45 years ago, by the way, goes even farther. I believe it is a meaningful and helpful approach of the Pope's, and if it is influential in those areas of the Catholic world that still teach the old evil doctrines, particularly certain areas of Latin America, it will continue the steady improvement in Jewish-Catholic relations that has been proceeding well since Vatican II, notably through the dramatic work of Benedict's predecessor, John Paul II. We can certainly hope so. It's Purim this coming Saturday night and Sunday, and in honor of the most fun of all Jewish festivals, here's a Sephardic Purim song, Kichlot Yeni, a drinking song for Purim from Tangier in Tunisia in North Africa.
Kichlot Yeni, tereni, Kichlot Yeni, tereni, Kichlot Yeni, tereni, algemani, algemani. Shivim heima hagivori, Kikum kishi zarim, shaftu shirim, kifi sharim, male maim, male maim. Lechem la'ochel, lechitam, orech machal, lechitila, mitbagdil, lifneha, miutan maim.
Kichlot Yeni from the Voice of the Turtle Sephardic Group for Purim this coming weekend. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, our expert. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Purim is coming up next Saturday and Sunday, one of the most joyous days of the year, the silliest, probably the most fun. How should we celebrate Purim?
Well, I can tell you that I'm going to do an early start, and I'm very excited about it.
Now, you know, Purim is also when you're supposed to start drinking Ad Lo Yada. I don't know if starting early on that is a good idea.
Well, I won't be drinking this time because my early start will be with a teenager's party that will be at my house today at 4:30, and I'm very excited. We're going to have a Purim party. But we will make pitas in a traditional way on an open fire on a sedge, which is a metal tool that you can prepare pitas on open fire. And we'll make some Purim food. We might make Oznei Haman, which is my favorite treat.
We call them Haman Tashin. At the ears of Haman is the Hebrew.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll have a lot of fun and jokes. Well, I'll try not to tell too many jokes because when I do that, nobody laughs for some weird reason.
It is a problem, yeah. It's like my teenage son said to me, Dad, why do you think your jokes are funny? Sorry, never mind. But enough about my therapy, Guy. So how do people get in touch with you if they want to come to this?
Well, they can either
call me. It's teenagers, just a reminder. Jewish
yeah,
teenagers.
They can catch me on Facebook. That's what teenagers do, and they can just come to my house or call my office and get the address. I won't say it here at the radio because I don't want all the listeners to come.
I understand.
Only
I understand.
Teenagers all and it- only nice ones.
Purim in Israel is such a different experience from Israel. In America, it's really fun. In Israel, it's really wild and raucous and involves everybody. People here think it's a kid holiday, but I've walked around streets in Israel and everybody's dressed up in something ridiculous and they shoot silly string on each other and hit each other on the head with noisemakers.
Well, I think we're all kids, especially on Purim. We're all kids. My grandfather was a kid on Purim. That's the fun of it, you know? You need to be joyful. You need to have fun. You need to wear costumes. And that's part of the idea, you know. And usually on Purim, we have a lot of festivals and what we call Purimon, which is usually kind of a fundraiser that the ninth graders are building with a lot of activities, shooting darts or throwing water at some certain stuff in order to gain points. And it's a lot of fun, and everybody dress up with their weird costumes, some like clowns, some like Superman, others dress like cowboys.
I'll bet there'll be some dressed like Hosni Mubarak this year.
Well, probably. That would be interesting. That would be interesting, definitely. Well, Purim Sameach, and I hope to see you, although you're not a teenager. But
no,
yeah, maybe
sadly.
Your kid will come.
I'll see if I can. You know, if he hears it from you, he might. If he hears it from me, for sure he won't. Chag Purim Sameach, Guy.
Purim Sameach.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant, the J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, who was just again named a semifinalist for the National James Beard Award for Chef of the Year.
That's right. Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Good morning and mazel tov. What's cooking at Janos now?
Well, all sorts of fun things. It's springtime, so this is when my restaurants come into their own, when we get all the new flavors from the gardeners, from baby beets to little peas to citrus. Wonderful things for us to cook with. The menus are light. They're fun. We're doing our 10 terrific taste menu year-round now at Janos, which is actually a misnomer. It's 12 different things over 4 courses. Lots of little mouthfuls of great tastes.
You know, my wife Wendy calls your food magic food.
That's so nice of her to say that. If I cook magic food, the place I do it is at Janos. That's where we pull out all the stops, and that's where it's really, that's the height of the cooking that I do.
What's the phone number for Janos?
615-6100.
Or www.janos.com. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about Egypt, but really in the larger sense, the Arab world and democracy. And you raised a great question at the end of last week's discussion, which was, should we fear or welcome the developments that are likely to transpire from all the apparent chaos, real chaos in Egypt, sort of rioting and stuff in some of the Arab countries? Is this likely to lead to more democracy? Can democracy really happen? Is the Arab world ready for it? A lot of good questions.
All right. Well, first of all, certainly we don't fear a peaceful democracy with respect for human rights and individual freedoms and all that. Clearly, that's not what we fear. The question is whether that is likely to be the outcome and what will determine that. What's necessary for that to happen? And in the absence of that, should we fear or embrace change in the Arab world? So those really are two different sets of questions, which I would like to treat separately, if that's all right with you.
Of course.
Okay, so on the question of what's necessary for democracy, you know, the assumptions are a strong middle class, people with a vested interest in due process, in the rule of law, in transparency and accountability and whatever. And the fact is that most people in the Arab world have little to no experience of any of this. One of the reasons they don't like Mubarak, it's not that he's a dictator. It's that he and many members of his regime are perceived as corrupt. They don't share the wealth. This is the reason that most people in Saudi Arabia hate the royal family. The sons and nephews and cousins of the king live like gazillionaires, in fact, probably are gazillionaires, and most people don't have two nickels to rub together. So this inequality and the perception of corruption, irresponsibility, lack of accountability, lack of transparency is, on the one hand, generating a desire for change. It's also fueling anti-American sentiment because there's a perception, right or wrong, and that's debatable how right or how wrong it is, that these corrupt, undemocratic regimes only remain in place because of American support and American aid and American deals and arms and intelligence and all the, you know, the whole shooting match. How do you go from centuries of not having these things to trying to build a society that does have these things? It's an important question because so far, I don't think we've quite figured it out. We certainly haven't figured it out in Afghanistan or in Iraq, where we've been dabbling in nation building. Not so clear that we have figured it out even in the Balkans, where we have occasionally played a role. And I think it's important for us to get this right, to figure out how we foster the values we claim to represent and we claim to support, where we've been pretty clearly hypocritical and two-faced in the Arab world at least.
And then maybe next week we can also talk about what happens when democracy elects people you don't like.
Exactly.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Two astronauts land on Mars. Their mission is to determine whether there is oxygen on the planet. "Look, it's simple," one astronaut says over his spacesuit radio. "Give me the box of matches," he says. "Either it burns and there's oxygen, or nothing happens." He takes the box and is ready to strike a match when, out of nowhere, a Martian appears, waving all of his seven arms. "No, no, don't," he shouts. The guys look at each other, worried. Could there be an unknown explosive gas on Mars? Still, the astronaut has a duty to do. He takes up the match and prepares to strike it. Suddenly, a crowd of hysterical Martians come, all waving their arms, all shouting, "No, no, please, no, don't do that. Stop, please." One of the astronauts says, "This looks serious. What are they afraid of? It must be serious." But still, they're there for science. They want to know if humans can breathe on Mars. So The astronaut strikes the match. It flames up, burns down, and nothing happens. The astronaut turns to the Martians and says, "Why didn't you want us to strike the match?" And the leader of the Martians steps up and says, "Today is Shabbos." You see, on Shabbat, we don't light fires. You're not supposed to light a match. Anyway, that was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. Like, even on Mars, you should probably not light a fire on Shabbat. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is the second in the book of Leviticus, Tzav, the section that establishes the rules for the various sacrifices offered in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan, and later in the temple in Jerusalem. There are many different types of sacrifices commanded, burnt offerings, guilt offerings, sin offerings, and so on. But one group of sacrificial offerings stands out, the offerings of peace, the Zevach Shlamim. And among this higher category of offerings, one in particular stands out even higher, the Zevach HaTodah, the Thanksgiving offering. The rabbis thought so highly of thanksgiving to God, they're quoted in the Talmud saying that when the Messiah comes, all sacrifices will be done and have completed their mission. All will be discontinued, with one exception, the Thanksgiving offering. That sacrifice will last forever, because even in a perfect world, we must remember to give thanks, to be grateful for what we have. This week's Jewish Poetry Slam comes from Louis Untermeyer, best known as the great American anthologist of other poets, but a fine poet in his own right, a Jewish one who dealt often with Jewish themes. It's called Prayer. God, though this life is but a wraith, although we know not what we use, although we grope with little faith, give me the heart to fight and lose. Ever insurgent let me be, make me more daring than devout. From sleek contentment keep me free, and fill me with a buoyant doubt. Open my eyes to visions girt with beauty, with wonder lit, but always let me see the dirt and all that spawn and die in it. Open my ears to music. Let me thrill with spring's first flutes and drums. But never let me forget the bitter ballads of the slums. From compromise and things half done, keep me with stern and stubborn pride. And when at last the fight is won, God, keep me still unsatisfied. That's Louis Untermeyer's poem, Prayer. To give thanks for the gift of not being satisfied. Like in this week's portion. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll find out the most controversial aspects of the great new Museum of American Jewish History in Philadelphia, which has gained the attention of Jews throughout the country and the world. Find out what that controversy is about when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Jewish groups and others are up in arms over an attempt to outlaw boy circumcision in San Francisco and put the issue to a popular vote. Self-described inta-activist Lloyd Schofield has been collecting signatures for a voter initiative that would criminalize infant circumcision in the California city. After 2 months of collecting names, he claims to be more than halfway to getting the 7,000 or so signatures he needs to put the matter on the November ballot. Schofield and a community of anti-circ activists say that infants should not be forced to participate in what they call culturally accepted genital mutilation. This is a human rights issue, he says. What you're doing is you're taking an infant and removing the most sensitive part of his body. Jewish organizations are pledging to fight the measure should it be placed on the ballot. Anti-Defamation League director Daniel Sandman called Schofield's effort discriminatory and misguided. This is hurtful and offensive to people in the community who consider this a coveted ritual, he said. Abby Porth of the Jewish Community Relations Council charged that Schofield was wasting city resources with an inappropriate political stunt that was unlikely to become law. This is one of the most fundamental practices in our tradition of over 3,000 years, she said. It's symbolic of our covenant with God. Indeed it is. Porth said the Jewish community would form a coalition against the initiative with medical professionals and with Muslims, who also practice circumcision. It's very similar to those of the Jewish faith, said Omer Nawaz of the Bay Area's Zaytuna College, one of the nation's only Muslim colleges. It's a religious tradition, and it's important to us. Both pro- and anti-circumcision advocates make health claims. Medical research does not entirely support either position. The American Academy of Pediatrics holds that there are benefits and risks both to infant circumcision and recommends parents make the choice for themselves. Circumcision rates among U.S. male infants have dropped in recent decades, but still, far more than half of newborns are circumcised. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, if the ban is approved, those caught cutting the foreskins of infants and other minors, you know, moils, would face up to a year in jail and $1,000 in fines. The ban would certainly face legal challenge and could be found to be in violation of the First Amendment right to freedom of religion, one can hope. But San Francisco is a weird enough place that it might actually pass. Yeesh. In Las Vegas, TribeFest, the Jewish Federation Movement's desperate effort to remain relevant for younger Jews, drew about 1,200 young Federation actives, ages 25 to 45, who showed up to be inspired and connected to Jewish causes in Israel in Sin City. Although successful in bringing the currently active younger Jews together, not that there are so many of them in Federation circles to begin with, but I guess that's kind of the point, it did not succeed in attracting the unaffiliated Jews so desired by the aging, increasingly irrelevant Federation movement. Weekend in Las Vegas, not quite enough? Perhaps they can next try a quick trip to Thailand to energize people's Judaism. And in Caracas, Venezuela, a new mall has opened called the Galeria Cebucan that provides a safe, upscale environment for embattled Venezuelan Jews to hang out and socialize. Filled with Jewish restaurants and shops, this mall provides a haven from a society that is both dangerous and dangerously anti-Semitic. The diverse Venezuelan Jewish community, ranging from the Orthodox to the avowedly secular, meets, eats, and shops together in this lovely new mall just a few blocks from the grand new Sephardic synagogue. In a country led by the virulently anti-Israel and kind of anti-Semitic dictator Hugo Chavez, this island in the storm is an interesting and maybe important refuge. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish This Morning Michael Rosenzweig, the president and chief executive officer of the new National Museum of American Jewish History in Philadelphia, the nation's only museum dedicated exclusively to the American Jewish experience. It has been a labor of more than a decade, as Michael Rosenzweig said. He's been there for about 2 years, came from Atlanta, where he was president of Hands On Atlanta, a nonprofit organization in Atlanta. He's also worked in the corporate world and as an attorney, senior vice president for corporate development and general counsel of Johns Manville for 2 years. And prior to that was a prominent attorney and senior partner in Atlanta office and has, well, done an awful lot of other things. What's the most unusual part about the museum?
Well, I guess I would say the most unusual thing about the museum is our uniqueness. And you've mentioned this, and I appreciate your mentioning it. We're one of a kind. You know, when you think about museums and you think about the Jewish story, Most of the story is told in more than one place. You know, take, for example, one obvious example, the Holocaust. You know, the Holocaust is sadly a critical part of Jewish history, a story that absolutely must be told and retold and certainly remembered. And I feel it very acutely myself personally. I'm a child of a survivor. The truth, though, is that we tell that story exceedingly well. We have in this country over 80 Holocaust memorials and museums. I think what's most unusual about our museum is that we're the only one of our kind.
You know, it reminds me of the fact that on college campuses so frequently Holocaust classes are the most subscribed. But isn't it important to tell the story of Jews' lives, not just our deaths?
Well, exactly, Rabbi, and that's you've said it very well. I think both stories need to be told, but what's important, and I think a distinguishing feature of our museum, is that we're telling about the lives, the experiences of Jews, ordinary Jews, by the way, on this continent and in this country. You know, one of the things that's very important about what we're doing here is that this is not a museum that is dedicated at all, really, to being boastful or chauvinistic about the accomplishments of American Jews. We're really about telling the story of ordinary American Jews and what it's been like to live in freedom in this country. It's really an exhibition that is organized around the theme of freedom, and it depicts the experience that Jews have had living in freedom in various ways, ways in which those freedoms Jews came here seeking were not for a very long time perfectly realized. And finally, when we get to the modern era, the current age in which those freedoms are perhaps not perfectly realized, but almost perfectly realized, we really talk a lot about the tensions of living in such freedom and at the same time trying to preserve heritage and tradition. You know, today the challenge for Jews, as you well know, is that we have luxurious, almost intoxicating freedom to do anything, including abandon our Jewish tradition. And one of the things that we focus on in the modern era in this museum is what it's like to live in that tension, live with those choices and challenges of freedom.
You know, the fascinating aspect about, for me, I think about an American Jewish History Museum is we are used to thinking about Jewish history as biblical history, as history of persecution, the Middle Ages. We don't really think about the lives we're living here as historical facts, and yet they are. Is this the most important Jewish community in the world, or the second most important Jewish community in the world?
I think a strong argument can be made. And I think a strong argument can be made as well that if you look at the grand sweep of Jewish history, again, thousands of years, obviously, we are blessed to be living during a period that can fairly be characterized as perhaps the golden age, a period during which we, as a Jewish community, enjoy greater freedom, greater prosperity, greater influence than perhaps at any other time in our history, you know, rivaled maybe only by the State of Israel since 1948. But if you look only at the diaspora, there's a strong argument that, you know, we're living through the golden age of Jewish history.
Yeah, this is as good as it gets. I'm glad to hear you say that. I use that in sermons a lot, and people are always looking at what's wrong. Does that come out in the exhibits, that sort of Jewish tendency to look over their shoulder to see if the Cossacks are coming?
Yes, it does. And you know, quite honestly, one of the things that that we try to do a very complete job in covering in the exhibition is the many respects in which the freedoms that Jews sought in this country were not perfectly realized for a very long time. You know, it's not just looking over our shoulders. In fact, we did face discrimination. We did face anti-Semitism. We did face quotas in college admissions. In the earliest days of this country, we faced laws that barred Jews from holding public office. And now all of these vestiges have, for the most part, disappeared. And as I said before, we now enjoy a kind of intoxicating degree of freedom in this country. But it wasn't always so. And of course, we describe all of that in the story we tell in the museum.
Are there any areas that are really off limits? Are there any aspects
No.
of American? Everything's open.
No. In fact, we thought a lot about that. And, you know, we talk about Jews and organized crime. We talk about Jews owning slaves during the Civil War and before and after. We did not want to restrict ourselves from any aspect of the story of the American Jewish experience. In many ways, it is the story of American history, although seen through the lens of American Jews. And we really wanted to include it all.
You had a really glittering beginning with lots of tremendous Jewish celebrities in attendance. Do you find ways to continue to incorporate them into the work of the museum?
Well, we did have a gala opening. We were very proud of it. It was important to us to send a very strong signal that this is a national destination museum that happens to be located in Philadelphia. Consistent with being a national institution of distinction, we wanted to make a certain splash. So we had Bette Midler and Jerry Seinfeld entertaining at the gala. Barbara Streisand was in attendance. Now, Barbara Streisand is, of course, one of our 18 individuals featured in a very special gallery we have called the Only in America Hall of Fame. We don't stress boastfulness or chauvinism, Jewish chauvinism, but at the same time, we did want to recognize that one of the amazing things about living in freedom is what one can achieve, and so we do have this Only in America Hall of Fame in which we feature 18 very prominent, remarkably accomplished Jewish Americans who have done things that literally changed the world. And Streisand is one, and so she continues to be incorporated in the exhibition and was someone who was at the opening.
Are you going to add people to that Hall of Fame?
We are, yeah. We haven't yet determined on what cycle, but perhaps every 18 months or so, maybe every 2 years, we will add to the original 18. Nobody will drop out. We'll simply enlarge the group that we're featuring there.
Kind of the Cooperstown of the American Jewish experience.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one has to be careful not to diminish the historical seriousness of the enterprise, I suppose. And, you know, we were very careful that all of the 18 were selected by our historians. We did have a public poll, but we made clear in the public poll that the ultimate selections would be by our historians because we understood that we wanted these figures to be truly historical, important figures. And, you know, notwithstanding the interest in having a popular vote, we couldn't necessarily assume that contemporary voters would recognize all of the important figures in American Jewish history.
I want to thank Michael Rosenzweig for a great visit on Too Jewish. What's the website for the National Museum of American Jewish History?
It is nmajh.org, National Museum of American Jewish History.
By the way, a lot of great stuff available on the website as well. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi. My pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity.
My pleasure. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Most of us deal with deadlines. April 15th is one we know from tax time. This year, through a change in the Arizona legislature's tuition tax credit law, you can still get tax credit for giving to Tucson Hebrew Academy up until April 15th, 2011, on your 2010 taxes. Everybody has an extended opportunity to ensure THA has the resources to provide financial aid to needy families. Plus, it is no cost to you. If you pay income taxes in the state of Arizona, Arizona law allows Arizona taxpayers to direct up to $1,000 of their state tax dollars, or $500 for single filers, to JETCO. That's JETCO. You can find it by going to JETCO.org online and making your tax credit contribution today. up until April 15th. Always check with your tax professional. Any other questions, you can call 647-8442 and speak to JETCO Coordinator Ori. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Abe Foxman, the important and controversial head of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. Our playout this morning comes from Paul Zim for the holiday of Purim this Saturday night and a week from today, Utsu Eitza. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace. Dabru dabar velo yakum, utzu etza vetufar, dabru dabar velo yakum ki imanu kel. Utzu etza vetufar, dabru dabar velo yakum ki imanu kel. Utzu etza vetufar, dabru dabar velo yakum. Utzu etza vetufar, dabru dabar velo yakum ki imanu kel. Barbello ya con chi ti manno ken Uzzu e zave tu parta fruta barbello ya con chi ti manno ken
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.